Today we talk all about an example of how gender plays out in real life, how masculinity and femininity are perceived and received, and the impact it has. When you reduce the feminine, you reduce all the feminine traits of caring, healing, listening, loving, which are indispensable as a balance to the masculine. What happens when you do that is toxic masculinity, when masculinity is not balanced by the feminine, and so it runs amok. Beloved, in this episode, we talk about how important it is that we embrace both.
Would it be okay if I were to tell you that I am afraid someday? So I call you up and you call me down. Would it be okay?
Well, hello and welcome to the Freed Hearts Podcast. My name is Robert Cottrell and I'm here as always with
Susan Cottrell.
Hi.
Hi, everybody.
Connect with us at freedhearts.org. Don't forget, Susan has a limited number of life coaching sessions available. Very limited time for that. But if you're interested, please reach out to us at Susan or at hello@freedhearts.org, and we'll get you all of the details on that. We continue on our journey of deconstructing religious baggage with laughter. Thanks for laughing. Laughter and love.
Yes.
Last week, we had God's big gender reveal, or better called a gender revelation. Today, we're going to explore gender, masculinity, and femininity in real life.
Yep.
How do we arrive at our moral decision-making? Again, if you just think about that, if we either are or are supposed to be one way or the other, you know, ultra male-dominated masculine, how are we arriving? How does that impact our moral decision-making? How do we know what to value in our decisions? Mm-hmm. We think we're so independent. But we are shaped, and I'm speaking personally here, but we're shaped in untraceable ways by the culture in which we're steeped, you know?
Yes, yes. And one person has had an outsized impact on our culture in our current thinking about moral decision-making.
James Dobson?
Well, yes.
Franklin Graham?
Yes.
Mark Driscoll?
Yes.
I could go on.
Yes.
But I think you're talking about somebody else.
Yes. But I'm talking prior to that, which kind of helped open the doors for them. And
That's true. That
is psychologist Lawrence Kohlberg with his stages of moral development.
In case you want to look him up, you want to spell his last name for us?
Kohlberg. And he did his work in the 50s and 60s. So it's inherently sexist and racist and has other problems. But perhaps the glaring problem with his famous scale is he used only male subjects. Only male subjects. So what you've got is a study on male moral decision making.
Yeah, so just sit with that for a minute.
Yeah.
And imagine with me, if you will, that a woman created a scale of moral decision making, used only women as subjects, and then held men to the conclusions they drew. Those men would be saying, oh, thanks so much. This is so enlightening. Thank you.
The enlightened ones would.
No, I think they'd say, I don't think so.
Yeah, because those studies will obviously yield different results. And there's six stages in this, and I don't agree with them. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at stages 3 and 4.
Okay.
Stage 3 of Kohlberg's moral development scale is a social relationships perspective that recognizes good and bad intentions. His higher level, stage 4, is a social systems perspective that is able to see abstract normative systems. So the social relationship that recognizes good and bad intentions.
That's scale. That's stage
is
3.
Lower on his scale than a social perspective that is able to see abstract normative systems. We're already skewing to the left brain. We're skewing to the analytical. Okay. Mm. And not to the interpersonal. But in other words, if you take into account people, motives, relationships, you're a scale lower than if you take into account only systems, rules, laws? Can you already see some problems? And I'll tell you about his famous experiment in a minute, which is very interesting. But pause to imagine the impact of Kohlberg's highly influential work. And it was highly influential. Churches, for example, who, in order to grasp and cling to their rules, which they feel they must enforce unflinchingly.
Well, they must enforce to keep their different, keep them different. Again, keep the teaching of contempt in place.
Yes.
To keep them, the us strong and the them weak, and to keep them different from the church down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they, in order to grasp and cling to these rules, they must step over the debris of human beings, ignore their humanity, their motives, and the impact on them of this rules enforcement.
Anyone who gets in the way.
Yeah. Or parents who strictly enforce their rules at the expense of their children's blossoming well-being. This is the imbalance of the masculine and the feminine energy that we've been talking about. This is one manifestation of that imbalance.
In this later famous experiment, Kohlberg posed a moral question to a group of 11-year-old boys and girls, this time he included girls, to analyze the logic of their reasoning. It's called the Heinz Dilemma. And it's about whether you put ketchup on steak or
That's not what it's about.
Okay, anyway. It's called the Heinz Dilemma. A man named Heinz considers whether he should steal a medication that he cannot afford to buy in order to save the life of his wife. He's asked the pharmacist to reduce the price, but the pharmacist has refused to do so. So what should Heinz do? This is a conflict between moral norms, between stealing and the value of life. Jake and Amy, who are two of the kids who participated, represent the thinking of the boys and the girls in this group. You want to tell us about them?
Yes. So Jake said, Heinz should steal the medication, reasoning that the value of property and not stealing has a lower value than that of human life and letting the wife die. And it says, quote, Jake called this dilemma sort of like a math problem with humans and worked out the solution that Heinz should steal the medication. He concluded that if Heinz were caught and put on trial, the judge would see the morality of his action and would not punish him for his theft. And this comes from a book by Alice Matthews, one T in Matthews, called Preaching That Speaks to Women. And so I'm using a lot of what she said here in describing this to you. Amy, on the other hand, believed that Heinz should not steal the medicine, but equally believed that the wife should not be allowed to die. She thought there might be other ways to get the medicine, like borrowing the money. If Heinz steals the medicine, he might save his wife's life for the moment, but if he goes to jail, he would not be there to care for her or to get medicine if she got sick again. This would also be a problem if he risked his ongoing relationship with the pharmacist. Amy saw the dilemma not as a math problem with humans, as Jake did, but as an unfolding story of relationships extending over time. She was concerned about the wife's continuing need for her husband and for the pharmacist's need to respond to the family situation. Amy was looking at a world made up of relationships rather than of people standing alone, a world held together through human connection, rather than through a system of rules.
Wow.
Jake and Amy represent two very different approaches to a moral problem. Jake saw a conflict between the value of property and the value of life, life having a higher value. Amy saw a fracture in human relationships. Jake's view fit Kohlberg's stage of individual rights and rules. Amy's fit the Kohlberg stage of impact on human relationship. Clearly, there are wide variations among people. They don't all fit neatly in a category, but broadly speaking, This supports our intuitive and experiential understanding of differences among feminine and masculine, and research confirms it. One more little piece here. Carol Gilligan, who worked as a researcher for Kohlberg before she wrote her own book called In Her Own Voice, Gilligan, and I'm reading from Alice Matthews' book now, Gilligan concluded that girls develop a basis for empathy built in their primary definition of self in a way that boys do not. Girls emerge with a stronger basis for experiencing another's needs or feelings as one's own. Therefore, relationships are experienced differently by men and women. In fact, the very concept of relationship may carry different meanings and significance for men and women beginning in early childhood.
Wow.
Now that is a mouthful. That is a mouthful. We approach relationships differently with wide variation among us, right?
Yeah.
And another researcher, Janet Lever, corroborated these findings as she spent considerable time observing fifth grade boys and girls during recess on the playground. She noted that boys played in larger same-sex groups while girls tended toward activities between two or three. Boys played much more competitive games than girls. And when the boys had a conflict, they would revert to the rules, hash it out, and go back to the game. And they seemed to enjoy the hashing out as much as the game itself. When the girls had a conflict, they tended to shift to a different activity so that they were caring for each other. Now, this is dated research, and I'm not sure how it has changed today. We've got Mean Girls stuff. I don't know how all that fits in. But it resonates, at least as partly inherent, or we wouldn't use terms like femme or butch, right?
Now
that shows that we have a concept of these.
Now, we're saying all of this right after the last episode where we kind of dismantled the gender binary.
Yes.
And this seems a little bit to be the opposite of that.
Yeah. I mean,
it seems to say, well, there is a gender binary here. So how does this fit with
that?
Yeah,
that's a great question. There are two vital things to see in what we're talking about today. One is that we have variation among the various genders. What we consider masculine traits that studies correlate more consistently with males, though not always, and what we consider feminine traits that correlate more consistently with females. That's just empirically true. And what we don't, that was a masculine word there, empirically true. And we don't really know how much is nature and how much is nurture.
Well, and also how much is taught.
That's what nature and nurture is,
Exactly. I mean, how much is just this ingrained teaching that's been passed down for so long?
Exactly. I think you mean how much is just kind of inherited from our teaching and how much is consciously taught. There's a lot of factors in there.
Yeah.
But I think it's easier to think of it in terms of yin-yang. It might not be so, like, triggering. And that the yang is the masculine of siloed, independent, competitive, individualistic, self-directed. And yin is the more feminine of holistic, interdependent, collaborative, communal, relational.
Yeah. And again, that's not to say that men are this and women are this.
Right. You know? Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely not. Everybody needs all of this, both feminine and masculine, both yin and yang. And the more balanced you are, the better. And these do vary. If you lined up people, if you could somehow quantify masculine and feminine and line up people from the most feminine on the left to the most masculine on the right, you'd have men and women and all the genders all along the way.
Hmm.
Okay? You would have more women on the yin side and more men on the yang side overall, but you'd have both all along the way. And that's good because we need to be self-directed and interdependent. We need to be both individualistic and collaborative. So that's the first thing to know, is that there is this variation. But the second thing to know is that the feminine has been trampled into the mud, treated as substandard compared to the masculine, more advanced, obviously, in moral development. I mean, that Amy's view was a scale lower in moral development, according to Kohlberg, than Jake's view reveals how insidious and systemic this devaluing of the feminine is.
And that's exactly the right word, systemic. It crosses all systems.
Yes.
Again, from honestly, the most intimate, which is how we feel about ourselves, to the home, to the schools, to government,
relationships,
to the church, to everything.
Everything. Hospitals, everything. And I mean, this is Kohlberg's view that the more Spock-like you are, the more morally developed, the more you can ignore and step over people's pesky humanity, the better. That's the impact of Kohlberg's valuation of the unique contribution of the masculine and feminine. When you reduce the feminine, you reduce the feminine traits of caring and healing and listening and loving, which are all an indispensable balance to the masculine. When masculinity is not balanced by the feminine, it is toxic. That's what we mean by toxic masculinity. It is literally unbalanced.
You know, and we've seen this. We've seen this, beloved, in courtrooms where winning is simply based on often just having the better argument.
Yeah.
In businesses where money is siphoned to shareholders by reducing the pay and benefits of the employees who actually do the work.
Yes.
In schools that teach to test and compete for grades above all else, and collaboration is often considered cheating.
Yes.
In churches, I mean, we could go on there for a long, we go on each of these areas for a long time, that enforce rules or their interpretation of rules over living, breathing people in their so-called care.
Yes, exactly. You know? It is so institutional and systemic and all pervasive. All these institutions in our masculinized culture lean into a math problem with humans approach. And so they reduce layered, thorny problems to quick black and white solutions. What we need is to rethink society's issues holistically as a complex problem full of human relationships, so we can avoid the unintended consequences that cause real harm to real people.
You know, I often look, I say this often, but I look at many of the problems today and I think, you know, the answer is in the middle. The answer is in the middle, but the problem, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but the problem is we're so polarized that there's no middle. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was confirmed as a Supreme Court justice by a vote of 99-0.
Yeah.
That will never happen again.
In this climate.
In this climate. And we're so polarized that there's no middle. There's no balance. And there's no tolerance for even the discussion about that.
Yeah.
You know?
And we're polarized because of algorithms, because of capitalism run amok. I love capitalism when it's done well, but run amok, it's... You know, power incentives for power and money.
Yeah.
And
Well, it's that masculinity, that toxic masculinity run amok. It's the patriarchy run amok.
Yes.
In all of these institutions and all of these systems.
Yeah. Yes. So that search for balance is the direction we're all headed. I do believe that. We are emerging into the age of spirit, the age of the feminine. That's the birth pangs we're feeling. Others have said this type of thing, that, you know, it won't go on like this hyper-masculinized culture forever. We're making big strides. Paradigms are breaking. Just keep your eyes open and know what to look for. Let's stick together and make the difference that we're here to make.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I love this journey. I just love this journey of deconstruction. I do. Is it challenging at times? It is, yeah. But it's not scary anymore to me because I know that we've already deconstructed some main things and the result, or some major things, and the result of that has been beautiful.
Yes.
You know, the more I do this, the freer I feel.
Yes.
The more I have compassion for others.
Yeah.
The more I am in love with universe, with spirit, and in love with others.
Yes. And you who are listening, you're on the right track to be doing this. You are on the right track. Do not lose heart. I mean, I say all these things I just said, and I feel like, oh my gosh, it can feel overwhelming. But don't lose heart. We are headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
And we're in this together.
We are asking questions. We are talking.
Yeah.
And we're so glad you're on this journey with us.
Yes. We love you so much.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Would it be okay if I were to tell you that I am afraid someday? So I call you up and you call me down. Would it be okay?
You've been listening to the Freed Hearts Podcast. We have extensive resources and vibrant, inclusive community for you at freedhearts.org. Please just come say hello. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions for the podcast, just email us at podcast@freedhearts.org. Audio engineering is provided by Luke Johnson. The music is provided by Hannah Cottrell, our daughter, the Grammy-nominated Saint Sinner. You can find out more about her and her music at heysaintsinner.com. Please share, subscribe, and follow on your favorite platform, and support us if you can. Thanks for listening.